I'm on a mission to help high flyers just like yourself, who until now have let the fear of public speaking hold them back from making a bigger impact. Join me as I find out the secret sauce from the world's leading speakers to make your speeches more interesting, enjoyable to give, and impactful for your audience. That's the mission, and this podcast will get you there. My name's Victor Ahipeni, and this is the Public Speaking Secrets Podcast.
Speaker Nation, what's happening? Victor Ahipeni here, and today we've got Cameron Brown, who is an international keynote speaker. He is a change maker and high performance expert, and he's also just come back from a TEDx event, which was the largest in Italy, and he was the final speaker there. And his speech has just gone live. I've checked it out. It's absolutely awesome, and I've been following Cam's progress, well, when I say progress, but his content for a long time, because there's something about it that gets people watching it, and it's really kind of, I've wanted to get in behind the scenes of that and get a bit of an idea of what that all looks like. So we're going to delve into that and a whole lot more today on today's episode. But to do that, got to welcome Cam. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Victor, great to be here, man.
So, A, congrats on your TEDx talk. It was absolutely amazing. For everyone out there, give us a little bit of background about you and then a bit of a background about what your talk entailed, and because it was definitely it fitted into the category of any good TED talk of it was a bit out of left field and a bit different and got everyone thinking.
Yeah. So for me, from Australia originally, I'm now over in, officially living in the US, but grew up in Australia. Have been running a coaching and training company for since about late 2010 now, and have loved doing speaking engagements, coaching engagements all across the world now. The last 18 months has been spent traveling the world permanently. I sold everything that I owned at the end of 2016, and it was really to demonstrate. I'm a big believer in being a living and breathing example of what I speak and coach on versus just talking about it and just coaching on it. So I sold everything that I owned. It was to showcase a few different things. It was to showcase that when we use technology in a purposeful way, we can really speed up and magnify our creativity, our innovation, and our impact in the world. It was to show that you can build relationships with anybody, anywhere, through the use of technology, like LinkedIn, for example, when we're talking about it from a business point of view, and really to show that you don't need things to be happy as well. And finally, that when we utilize our unique set of talents and strengths, whatever they are for each of us, we can really, really create some remarkable things in the world and make a difference. So that was an amazing 18 months. There were speaking engagements across four continents. Well over a million people saw the videos organically, which was remarkable. Became a National Geographic Explorer out of that journey, and was then invited to deliver the closing talk, as you mentioned before, the closing talk at Italy's largest TEDx event. So with that talk, it was the title was "What Future Are We Creating?" And it was really to showcase that when we can utilize technology in one of two ways, or one of two primary ways, we can either use it in a way that advances us or in a way that actually detracts us from where we're wanting to go. And I really wanted to demonstrate, because technology has been, especially digital technology like social media, has been copying a pretty bad rap recently around creation of mental health issues and other challenges from a behavioral point of view. And I really wanted to demonstrate that technology isn't the problem, it's simply pointing to it and it's magnifying it. That if unconsciously we believe we're not enough, or if unconsciously we believe we're not worthy, then we will try to fill that internal void with external sources. And so to demonstrate that, I already had a lot of examples from the previous 18 months of how technology can be a remarkable thing, especially when coupled with this sense of curiosity about what's possible. But I really wanted to drive home the message in the talk. And so in the 4 months leading up to it, I secretly worked with more than 80 people from 40 countries around the world. They all recorded this one of the songs that I wrote while traveling last year called There Is Still Time. They recorded it in their part of the world. And so we had people in front of rivers and castles and ruins and mountains and all these other crazy locations in like Japan and South Korea and Venezuela and Macedonia and many other countries around the world. And then for my part in the video, we transported a grand piano to Garden of the Gods in Colorado, which is this beautiful red rock formation with mountains off in the distance. We did that at sunrise with a commercial drone videographer and other close-up videos, and pulled that all of that content into an animated split-screen video that played on the big screen while I played the song live on stage during the talk on a grand piano. So it really drove home the message that technology can be used in good ways, especially when you're utilizing it to enhance your creativity and innovation. Every relationship that, and it was purposefully done like this, every relationship with the people that were involved in the video was done through digital technology. I've never met any of them in person. And before the project, we never knew each other even existed. So it really, really helped to drive home that if we can just create something like that, remarkable like that in just 4 months, imagine what could be possible within companies, within people, people's lives when they utilize technology in more conscious and purposeful ways and really nurture their curiosity around what is possible.
Yeah, and I have to give you kudos because it sounded like a hell of a lot of work just even getting a industrial drone with a grand piano in the middle of nowhere.
It was a pretty full-on 4 months. I mean, it was we did it in a short space of time, but yeah, don't get me wrong, it was a lot of work and a lot of late hours involved in that, but it's really worth it when you see content come to life and it inspires people, especially people that you've never met and people from all over the world. That's a pretty remarkable thing to be able to provide.
And if people want to check out that talk, apart from us linking it at publicspeakingblueprint.com, where can they go on YouTube to watch that?
Yeah, I mean, YouTube, you can just search Cameron Brown, What Future Are We Creating? And it'll come up on the search results. Otherwise, you can also go to thrivingcollective.com/change. That has the talk embedded in there. It has the music video as a standalone video embedded in there as well. So you can, you know, watch both there. So they're the couple of ways that people can check that out.
Cool. And when you were saying about that content, you've put out other stuff that I've seen, yeah, over 1 million organic views, which, you know, has a lot of people salivating when it comes to, you know, their content creation and things like that. What and why do you think it's your content, you know, particularly organic, is getting so many views? And, you know, what do you think special about it? And how do you go about crafting your content?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I never know exactly what's going to go either viral or semi-viral. I think anybody who thinks that they know that, I mean, you can increase your chances of that, but anyone who says this is absolutely going to go viral, I think you're kidding yourself. But what I look at is how can I create? And this came to at the end of 2016, I chose to write less on the. I set out a 3-year vision, and then I set out 12-month outcomes and 90-day projects. And in the 3-year vision, it had previously been very, very long in terms of very specific about what I wanted to achieve, when I wanted to achieve it. I had less on my list in those 3 years at the end of 2016 going into 2017 than I'd ever had before, and I've achieved more than I've ever had before. So it opened me up a little bit. But the reason I mentioned that is because one of the things that I wrote on there, and it's a very subjective piece, is create masterful works of art. And there wasn't any attachment to what exactly that was going to be, but it is, you know, create masterful works of art. And so as time has gone on and especially throughout 2017 and throughout this year as well in the implementation of this latest project, it's how can I create something that I deem personally as a masterful work of art, that if I look at it and go, wow, you know, take away anybody else but me personally, and just am just blown away by what I've been able to personally create, That's a specific criteria for me. In terms of the ability for it to get out there, it does need to be something that people want to share. At the end of the day, if it's not shareable, then you can have something that's really great, but people aren't going to necessarily share that. And part of that, you won't know that until it happens. And even after, I think I've created less and less attachment to when something goes viral or when something gets the views, because when I remember releasing, there was a video that I did showcasing the natural beauty of Colombia, rainforest, waterfalls, beaches. And then I use that in some of the talks that I deliver as well. And that video, it wasn't until, I think it was about 10 or 12 weeks after it came out, and it had gotten maybe 5,000-10,000 views, something like that. And then it started getting shared again. And it started getting shared a lot more, until a point where the official site of Colombia ended up sharing the video, and it just went crazy. Like, it was getting about 5,000 plays an hour, for example, for a period of time. And so I think there's an element of, yes, you can put great content out there. Then there's also the element, there's a smaller element of luck of the right people seeing your content, because you can, you know, share it out manually to people that you would like to have them share. But at the end of the day, yeah, you've got to have them actually look at it and actually want to share it. So I think the moral of this is that you're putting a number of pieces in place to give it the best chance of having that shareability and having a chance of going viral, or at least having a chance of getting into the right people that you're wanting to have see it, is really important to do. But yeah, there's been plenty of videos, just so that those of you tuning in, there's been plenty of videos that haven't gone viral, that are still great content. And again, I think it's about consistently putting out great content. And then eventually there's pieces that stick. There's other pieces that maybe don't go as well as you'd like them to. But at the end of the day, it averages out pretty nicely.
Mm. And do you, with some of the stuff that's gone viral, do you deliberately reach out to certain places? Like, do you up the luck factor, as I'd probably call it, or is it just hoping that it gets in front of these people?
Yeah, there was one of the videos that I did, which was the song that I wrote about bullying and suicide. That's reached, like, it's got past 1.8 million views on YouTube now, and that's 100% organic, and over the time that it's been up. I don't think I've ever reached out to anybody. It just worked well. The keywords were specific in there about what it was, and there was some research done in that, which, you know, like you said, up the luck factor there. But there wasn't any specific reaching out back then. I didn't really know too much about, you know, reaching out to people who had, you know, good followings, for example. With the Colombia video, there was more reaching out. I didn't have a huge network in Colombia specifically for them to want to share it, for example. I didn't know if people elsewhere were really wanting to share that. But I still did reach out to a lot of my contacts, especially those who had a decent following, to see if they would want to share that. And then as time's gone on now, it becomes this snowball effect where you kind of get this, if you can get some traction to begin with, then all of a sudden other people see it. Like, I've had multiple people reach out, Sophia Vergara's team reached out to use some of the content in one of their campaigns for one of the products she was releasing. There's a documentary that's going to use the content. There's a travel website that for that specific video they're wanting to use or create this edited version and credit that. And they've got, like, millions of followers. That's just a recent one. So you know, once the momentum builds there, it's much easier. Mm. Putting those things in place first and foremost is really important. And that happened with the, you know, releasing out the video with the people from 40 countries around the world. Again, it was reaching out to key people and having them share as much as possible to give it the best chance of getting into the right hands and hopefully, you know, ideally making a great impact. And I think that's probably just the last thing to mention here, is that if you're just, to me anyway, if you're just wanting stuff to go viral for the sake of it or to get famous or whatever you want to do, I think you're kind of missing the point. I'm a big believer that storytelling and quality videos have really genuinely have the power to change people's perceptions, change people's behaviors, change people's belief systems, and have them care more about whatever topic it is you're doing, whether it's a certain thing about education or the environment or the planet or a way of getting them to think differently. That's what you should be focusing on, I believe. You know, when I look at, you know, creating masterful works of art, it's not just an ego thing for me. Like, yeah, I want to believe that I have done my best work, which is definitely a criteria around creating those masterful works of art. And because I wouldn't class that otherwise if I hadn't done my best work, which means I need to step up, right? So it's a way of keeping myself accountable to that. But the ultimate is that the reason why I'm creating that is to inspire millions of people around the world, to ensure that I'm doing my part in the evolution of humanity and the well-being of our planet. So I think that's something to really drive home here for those tuning in.
Yeah, I think it is as well. And I mean, like you're saying, trying to get famous or get a few views or something, it takes the same amount of work, yeah, to as what it does to create an impact. So yeah, if you've got option A or option B, you may as well take option B. And I think the listeners here, that they're all trying to get their message out to a bigger audience, and hopefully that's an impactful message and you know, isn't too self-serving. But to be able to create content, to be able to be that creates opportunities like it has for you, whether that being on stage or, you know, running trainings or just getting in front of more people and having an impactful message. It's the more people you can get in front of with a positive message, the better. And yeah, that's why it's
completely
back
and I think. Yeah, what I was going to say just there is, like, I completely agree with you, and I'm a big believer then if you're staying on message, then the right people are going to watch your videos, and the people that you're wanting to watch those videos. If you're just creating, to me, it's like if you're just creating content for the sake of creating stuff to get more views, you're relying on external validation, and that from a behavioral point of view is going to kick your ass, because when you don't get the likes or don't get the comments or don't get the shares, because there will be a video that will happen that you don't get that necessarily, or at least at the level that you'd like it to, that can impact your well-being overall, your ability to go forth with confidence going forward. Whereas if you're internally driven, you're creating something, and yes, you want to create it for your market, but you also want to make sure that you're staying aligned to your purpose, aligned to that mission that you have, aligned to who you are, and aligned to what makes you unique and what makes you powerful and beautiful, right? When you do that, it allows you to provide a unique point of difference in how you're providing and how you're delivering that content, but allows you to feel that it's you who's delivering that content, which as you're going forward and as you're continuing to build your brand in this, you know, world of speaking, for example, you're continuing to feel like it's an enhancement of who you already are, rather than feeling like it's actually pulling you in a different direction to where you're unconsciously and ideally at your purest sense wanting to go.
That's a very good message for everyone to take on board. When it comes to, yeah, you're talking about building your brand, and yeah, obviously your brand is continuing to build, and yeah, there's a lot of, people can go back and check out the third episode where I talk about, different ways to kind of build authority and expertise to create more opportunities. And whether that's, you know, writing a book or getting more speaking engagements, running podcasts, creating creating amazing content, being a blogger, you know, all these different things, getting media exposure. As it grows, generally more larger opportunities start presenting themselves to you. And for you, Cam, it's been, you've been, this year and next year working towards a lot more professional keynote speaking. So how has that transition kind of come about? And what are some of the ways that you've started to get some of these keynote presentations that you're doing?
Yeah, it's a great question. In terms of how it came about, it actually came about when I was in Mexico living earlier this year. It seems that each time that I moved to a new country over this 18-month period, I really questioned, and it was done in an empowering way, but it was still challenging at the same time, of, you know, what's that next level of impact for me? How can I make an even greater difference? How can I make an even greater impact? And when I was in, I really didn't have that much of an intention of being in the US specifically. And then my sister actually said, "Oh, would you ever think of living in the US or Canada?" And I still remember saying to her, "I don't think so." And then I started just playing around with the idea. And this is sense of curiosity. If those of you tuning in, and when you check out the talk, you'll hear about how I talk about curiosity and the power of that. And so I just started being curious about, well, you know, if I did that, what might that look like? And I started playing around with it, and it started solidifying into, well, this is actually a really good next move, because in terms of making that next level of impact, it was going to allow me to be in one location and base out of there and still be in different countries around the world throughout the year, but spending a majority of my time in one location to be able to inspire many people in that group setting through speaking and training engagements. And so then as it went on, it was, well, how am I going to make that happen? Which meant that we had to go through the whole visa process, which is a massive process in itself of making that happen. But, I'd never been more certain once I had, uncovered why it is that I wasn't going to do it in the first place and why it is that I should go and do it. It was very driven by, how can I make this next level of impact? This is the next level of impact. Is to continue providing and doing videos that especially the use of music and video that really inspires people, but also through the speaking engagement. So that was a very conscious decision after I realized that. And then the second part of your question is from a development of opportunities. I mean, I had built and continue to build a lot of relationships in the US already. I had ran some peer network events in the previous years, and so already had some decent contacts. And so I've become a speaker resource for a membership organization that has entrepreneurs, very, very successful entrepreneurs, by the way. They've got to be doing at least, multiple millions of dollars a year just to be a member. So, there's that, which I'm a speaker resource for now, and building relationships out there. The building of relationships has been a incredibly important part of my existence, really, let alone development of opportunities. So that continues to be the case, and will continue to be the case. The way that it shifted a little bit now in terms of some new pieces is that within North America, I have four speakers bureaus that are representing me now, which is fantastic. So that's a nice new addition to the development of opportunities. And also then media has been a big part. So, already this year there's been TV and radio and podcasts and published interviews already this year, which has been fantastic, and looking forward to a number of more of those throughout the year. And that's partly an authority piece, and also, again, it's content generation at the end of the day, to be able to showcase the know-how, showcase the knowledge, but also to be able to provide value to people. And hopefully then that leads to certain opportunities, which has definitely happened in the past. They're a few of the main ways that's happened so far.
I think that's brilliant insight for people, because a lot of people deciding I'm going to be a professional speaker or a keynote speaker and things like that. And I think we had Eric, Eric Tamundi.
Great guy. Yeah, love him. It's amazing.
Sort of delved into that professional speaking space as well, and kind of the bureaus is something that a lot of people don't realize that, it's the power of leverage, really. Yeah, it's like getting a real estate agent to go look for a house for you. That they can find different things. When it comes to you deciding on events, are they getting the type of events that you're wanting to? And then when it comes to, I guess, price negotiation, is there any kind of insider tips that you've found so far in this journey into the professional speaking space?
Yeah, for me now going forward, I mean, I've got there's a one coming up in 2019, for example, in the US, where again we're going to have, it's more of an intimate type of event. So I'm loving the range of events where, you know, there could be hundreds or thousands of people at the other end of the spectrum. But for this event, you know, we have it'll be somewhere around 90 people. We have a grand piano that's going to be on the stage. They're working out the venue at the moment to be able to have the dinner tables or the dining tables on the stage with me set out around the piano. So it'll be this, like, just a cool, intimate, exclusive kind of experience where it's like almost like I'm speaking with them rather than speaking to them or at them. And so, I'm, you know, I love ranges of experience, but for me and yeah, going forward, it's very much about having a grand piano on stage to be able to deliver these multi-sensory keynotes and be able to provide something that they can't get anywhere else. You know, with the evolution of technology, you can go online and check out a talk or check out an audiobook or check out a podcast and get some incredibly valuable information, right? From this podcast, for example, right? And so it becomes, you know, what else can you do on stage that delivers and provides an experience that they can't get from anywhere else, that they would want to come and see you because they just can't get this experience in their living room, for example, or in their office. And so that's what it's been for me for a while now, and will continue to. For me, it's about continuing to challenge what's possible on stage. I already am thinking about, like, what else can I do, and how else can I provide these remarkable experiences. You know, music and film is are two parts of that, but there's other technologies coming out, like augmented reality, for example, and other tools that can be used to, again, create this immersive type of experience. So I would be suggesting those tuning in is what makes you unique, and two, how can you utilize that in a way that is perceived as valuable? I think that's really important to drive home. I had been toying around with having music on stage for periods of time, and now, like, you won't see me on stage with a digital piano, because the brand that I've built and will continue to build is classy. And it's got to have a cool factor. It's got to be, oh, that's so freaking amazing. And if you've just got a digital piano in there, it's not really going to set that scene. Yeah. It's more of that gimmick. And I had seen that. So this, just, I want to mention this because this is some of the thinking that's gone into my mind about how do I position this, what could easily be seen as a gimmick, and ensure the best chance of it not being seen as that and actually being seen as an addition to the value that I provide, a very powerful point of difference versus a thing that people go, ah, yeah, that's a bit cheesy, right? So that's just something that, for those of you tuning in, if you're already doing it, think about how you could do it even better. If you're still working out how you're going to position yourself, then be thinking long and hard about how can you do this in a unique way, and it's something that allows you that key point of difference. So yeah, that's what I'd recommend there. And then, yeah, I mean, from a negotiation point of view, you know, I mean, the new piece of having speakers bureaus on board is that they really do all of that and working out all of the details for you. For me, it's always been about relationships. And so, you know, usually when I'm having a conversation with someone about speaking somewhere, we already have a decent relationship. And so we're just working out what the best way forward is. I'll often ask them, you know, do you have a budget for this? And, you know, and that's usually pretty early on in the conversation. And, you know, if they're an event organizer of some description, or if they're an event organizer within an organization, they've either got the budget or they don't have the budget. Like, that's already been budgeted for. And so they'll know those numbers. And I mean, I've personally found that they're pretty okay with sharing what that is. And so that can give me a feel for, you know, is this something that is in alignment with my fee structure as it stands? If it's higher, then I can look and go, oh, well, you know, maybe it's an even better fit than I thought it was going to be, right? And then if it's not, then I've personally, me and you know, those tuning in, you've got to make a decision about what is the return on investment potentially going to be. If maybe they don't have a budget, is that, you know, are you able to either sell from stage, or are you able to at least get them onto your mailing list, which then can allow you to build in opportunities. I mean, I don't do as many anymore, but there was, I'll definitely do one if I can see that there's going to be a potential great return on investment from it, because there's been engagements that I've done which has resulted in, you know, an ongoing coaching client, and that's a lot of that's a decent level of revenue. Mm. That is, you know, at times has been more than what I would have been paid if I was paid a speaker's fee. So it's just to keep that in mind as well. If I end up doing something for and do it as a free of charge piece, or if there's a discounter because there's a, maybe it's a not for profit, I'll sometimes do that. But if you know if there's a lowering of it, to me it's usually going to be, what's the return on investment I'm going to generate from this, or potentially generate from this? So if it's going to be like that, I want to make sure I understand who the audience is, whether they are my potential client outside of specifically the speaking engagement. If it looks like they could be, then I work out, right, what's a lead magnet that I could offer from stage, that, you know, if I'm not allowed to, because a lot of them you're not allowed to hard sell, right? But a soft sell is okay. You go, hey, you know, I've got a one-page checklist on the 7 ways to do this. You know, for those of you who'd like a copy, I'll just we've got a little bowl here. Shoot that around the room. Just pop your business card in there. I'll make sure you get that over the next couple of days. You know, it's a non-salesy. It's just purely a value add, and it's actually, you know, people do. If you provided a really good a great value, then people generally do want to find out more. And if you haven't got that next step for them to take, then you're kind of selling yourself short and selling them short as well. So they're just a few ways to go about. But I'll usually, you know, when it's a paid engagement, then it's a speaker's view plus the travel plus accommodation. There are a few things that hopefully helps.
Yeah, no, that definitely does. And I think, yeah, it's very, really important to value yourself and realize that you're either getting paid or you're selling for the majority of the talks. Like Russell Brunson at Grant Cardone's event, he closed $3 million from stage.
Nice.
And yeah, that was, yeah, he did a big breakdown on some podcast I was listening to about that. And it gives you the insight. He said, usually I only get paid and I, you know, people find the solution that I'm talking about later. But he said this one, he went all in with it. And the work behind the scenes to be able to sell at a massive event like that was, it was pretty mind boggling. But look, I know both of our time and even our listeners' times are super valuable. I just want to finish up. What's a book that's in the last 12 months had the biggest impact on you? It doesn't necessarily have to be speaking, or it can be on mindset, business, or just life in general. What's something that's had a big impact?
Good thing is it has been about speaking. So in the lead up to my talk in Rome, I listened to the audio book called TED Talks by Chris Anderson. Remarkable book. I don't know if it's in actual book format or if it's only the audio book. Like, go and check that out. Do some research. But the audio, I prefer audio books. But whatever your listening style is, tuning in. The reason I love that so much is there was such a practical breakdown in what can be done to really create a remarkable talk and the structure behind that. I'd gone through plenty of speaker training and workshop training and all of that before, and there were a few concepts in there that were really, really valuable, and some that I actually built into the talk that turned it into, you know, took it from being great to you know, being something that people have given feedback that it's truly something remarkable. So yeah, that's what I'd recommend. And for those of you, if you're thinking about speaking or just wanting to communicate better with people, that is an outstanding book to get. And I really highly recommend that.
Yeah, well, it's funny because in the show notes of every episode, I've got my 5 favorite book recommendations and for people wanting to improve their speaking. And believe it or not, that's one of them, because it's a brilliant book. And who better to learn from than someone who's facilitated probably the biggest speaking thing outside of probably Toastmasters in the world, and of your high quality speakers and people who haven't been speakers prior to it. Yeah, he's seen what works and what doesn't. So we'll link all of that in the show notes at publicspeakingblueprint.com. Cam, thank you so much. I think my biggest 2 takeaways have been, your network is your net worth. making those connections, you know, it's helped you to a degree with some of the virality. It's helped you with different speaking engagements. It's helped you, you know, level up, you know, kind of in every country that you've been to from the sounds of things. And I think the other thing is, you know, create masterful pieces of art, which is something I think in this content saturated world, we often forget about. We just put out content for the sake of putting out content rather than putting out something that, you know, has an impact behind it and is hopefully bigger than our own ego. In the impact that it does have. So I appreciate you a lot for sharing that. If people want to find out a bit more about you, follow your journey and see what you're up to, what can they do and where can they go?
Yeah, two best places. Thrivingcollective.com is the website, and on social channels, the handle is @AskCameronBrown. So A-S-K, Cameron Brown. That's on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, all of those channels. So yeah, check out. I'd love to connect with you guys, those tuning in. And yeah, it's been really great catching up today, Victor. I've loved today.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot for your time, mate.
Thanks, man.
If you want to fast track your confidence and impact with public speaking, then be sure to jump over to publicspeakingblueprint.com, where there's an array of free resources to help you no matter where you are on your journey to becoming a more powerful speaker. And while you're at it, jump over to Facebook and join our free community called Speaker Nation, where there's a ton of other like-minded individuals just like yourself looking to level up. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss next week's episode.